This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Good afternoon, Winnipeg. Good afternoon, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this afternoon at TSN1290.ca, good afternoon, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. I'm your host, Drew Mandel, joined at Boston Pizza City Place by my colleagues Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this Saturday afternoon. The Winnipeg Jets and the Toronto Maple Leafs do action, do battle at 6 p.m. at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Joining us in 1 hour's time from the National Post, Michael Trakos. 2 o'clock this afternoon, we're going to be joined by Scott Powers of ESPNChicago.com as the Jets have a back-to-back situation where they'll be playing in Chicago tomorrow evening. And coming up in about 30 minutes' time, our good friends from Veritas Hockey, Tom Lynn and Kyle Kozier, will join us live at Boston Pizza City Place. You can follow us on Twitter at IllegalCurve, Facebook.com/IllegalCurve. And our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news, including audio from both the Jets and the Leafs. Pre-game skates this morning is IllegalCurve.com. Without further ado, I say to both Richard Pollock and Ezra Ginsberg, good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing on this fine Saturday afternoon?
It's not fine, Drew. It's minus 40 outside.
I was taking the positive approach.
It was minus 5 for about 3 hours yesterday.
Yeah, and Ezzy and I both have colds. It's not the most it's not the easiest weather to handle the dry in your lungs. But, fine is wouldn't be the appropriate term. But yeah. In any event, it's...
Fine, apparently it's a grumpy Saturday.
It's not a grumpy Saturday. I mean, it's great to be at it's great to be at Boston Pizza here. It's great to be at the Leafs in town. Hockey Night in Canada. A birdie told me, is that Bob Cole's doing tonight's game.
That's right.
So that gives it a little bit more of that air of, the Jets are back in the NHL. You get the Leafs. It's just something special about the whole... the whole atmosphere today. And you can already see at Boston Pizza, people piling in earlier than they had just 2 weeks ago, so I'm looking forward to tonight's game.
Yeah, Richie, we can say that it's fine that we're on the air talking hockey, but as far our current health status, it's not fine, unfortunately. But
so long as you don't touch my cough button, yeah. And I don't touch yours.
Yeah, exactly.
You guys are going to be using we had to do a pre-game, pre-show training on how to properly use the cough button for the two of you guys, because you figure you're going to be using it a fair bit this afternoon.
Yeah, a lot of people are going through, it's this time of year, back to school, back to work after the Christmas holidays.
And I must say, both of you live a very healthy lifestyle is also what I was going to add.
Richie's, you know what, I wouldn't speak for Richie. Richie's a pretty healthy guy. He works out regularly and he's pretty good. Me, on the other hand, I live off of McDonald's and the couch, so I'm not exactly the healthiest guy. But, Drew, back to the just quickly, the Jets and Leafs. Richie mentioned Bob Cole's going to be doing the play-by-play here, and we've got a couple of outdoor games here. Really, when the Leafs are in town, it's always special. I think, as we know, there are going to be, unfortunately for maybe True North, there are going to be a lot of Leafs jerseys, in the crowd today, but... That's just the way it is. An original six team always seems to have a lot of fans, but it's always special when the Leafs come into town. We might not be in the Eastern Conference anymore, but there's always that added excitement when Toronto's here on a Saturday night.
Yeah, that's just it. And I actually think, I know that people don't like when necessarily the Leafs fans are in the building. I think it makes the game more interesting
from
a fan perspective. It gets, because the other teams got fans, rowdy fans, and I think the Jets fans then are more rowdy. If you watch the games on the West Coast, the Jets fans in Calgary, Calgary fans seem to have to respond to the Jets, the intensity of Jets fans.
Yeah, well, that's what happens is you'll hear the Go Jets Go chant, and then you take that Calgary game, for example, you hear the Go Jets Go chant, and then you hear it, and then it quickly gets drowned out by the home team refusing to let their arena get taken over. Could be the same situation here, and I don't think it will be. I don't think the Leafs fans will be out in that significant of an abundance that they're going to be getting a Go Leafs Go chant going, louder than a Go Jets Go chant. But there will be a buzz. You can feel the buzz already. 2 weeks ago it was Columbus on the Saturday night, and Columbus destroyed the Jets, and it was a fine game and everything else. And Saturday night just brings a little extra buzz on its own.
For sure.
But you can feel right now, 6 hours before puck drop, that there is a little bit more excitement in the air for a Saturday night Jets-Leafs game, just like it will be, I think, this coming Friday. The Jets and the Canucks, I think, will also have that extra little bit of excitement in the building.
Well, Drew, and I also think the fact that the Leafs were in town last night, well, yesterday, actually, afternoon, and they were practicing here yesterday, and then it was revealed that James Reimer, of course, from Morwena, Manitoba, is going to be playing. So I think that's added the fact that they've been in town an extra day, the connections with the five Manitoba players, Randy Carlisle, former Winnipeg Jet, former coach of the Manitoba Moose. There's so many connections, and I think there's added hype around this game, considering the Leafs are coming in fourth game of a four-game road trip, and they were absolutely embarrassed by the Dallas Stars. I'm not sure if you guys saw that game.
Yeah, I saw
it. But I watched almost all of that game, and they were absolutely embarrassed. The Stars probably could have won that one 10-1. So they're playing to end their road trip strong here, and the Jets are trying to get back on the winning track after losing to San Jose.
The only thing more embarrassing than the Leafs' performance on Thursday night in Dallas was when the Dallas Stars game operations put the picture of Justin Bieber's mugshot up on the big screen underneath the banner of Toronto Maple Leafs fan, which was, you know, very well done by the Dallas Stars game ops there.
Well, there's nothing hotter than Justin Bieber jokes right now. I'm sure we'll get a couple in throughout the day.
Well, they were also able to incorporate some Rob Ford jokes, so it was, you know, everybody was winning on Thursday night except for the Toronto Maple Leafs, or I guess the city of Toronto in that instance. You know, when Justin Bieber does well, he's from Toronto, or he's from Stratford. When he does poorly, he's from Stratford. When he does well, his dad lives in Winnipeg, you know, things of that nature. It's been a rough couple weeks there for Justin, but that's a separate issue altogether for another show.
I sure hope it's a separate issue altogether.
You know what? I gotta mention something. This is a little bit off topic here.
Really? More off topic than this? Because we're already off the rails about 7 minutes
into the show. My grandmother's maiden name on my mom's side is Bieber. So I was thinking, I better not be related at all to Justin Bieber. I'm serious. And it's the same spelling. So when I saw that,
so
I was...
Are you saying you were or you weren't a believer?
I've never been a believer, but I'm just saying, if there's...
You've been sitting outside the Forks, but not playing music. You were just passed out.
Even if there's a connection, because he does have Winnipeg roots. Yeah. So basically what I'm saying is I might be a distant relative of Justin Bieber. So...
That would explain a lot.
My life is over.
You know, that explains a lot. And we'll get back to the Leafs. We'll get back to the Leafs, you know, throughout the rest of the show here. I want to sort of shift our focus back to Thursday night and the road trip through California. The Jets obviously getting that big win in Anaheim on Tuesday night. And then on Thursday night, they lost a hard-fought battle to the San Jose Sharks 1-0. You know, did those two games prove anything to you? Or did it change your perception of this team going forward?
I think everything about this team is changing your perception of it. So I think that was part of it. I think against Anaheim, Drew, they were, you know, played really for most of the game. I think the fact that they hung in there and didn't throw in the towel at any point in time and kept working hard and were opportunistic, I think those are good features of the team. Hanging in there with San Jose in a 1-0 game and you know, just making a mistake on the clearing attempt. And overall, when you lose 2-1 goal games to two of the best teams in the National Hockey League, I think you do take something from it.
They won one of those games.
Sorry. You win one of those games and you get outplayed, in those two games, I think you take something from it. The Anaheim game, I was a little bit concerned with some of those defensive breakdowns still, but what I like is the fact that I think those are slowly moving by the wayside. And I think this team has a certain... You know, Paul Maurice comes in and talks about speed, and I think they're playing fast right now, and they're playing with an intensity. Now, there's a talent discrepancy. Like, even if they do play well, and they go into Anaheim and San Jose, and they skate and they play well, there's that talent discrepancy that if both teams play well, they probably won't be able to overcome. But on a night-in-night-out basis, that talent discrepancy isn't that great when they're not playing Anaheim and San Jose. So I thought the games against those teams were a good barometer for where this team is. And if you're a Jets fan, optimistically so, you're thinking where this team is going.
Right, Richie, and you can't take the two California games really separate from the three games that were played here that they won under Paul Maurice. You have to take the five games as a whole. But I think, Drew, you know, to take the two California games and put those in a vacuum, I think it really is impressive because Richie mentioned that they were outplayed by the Anaheim Ducks. And let's be honest, almost every team in the NHL is outplayed by the Anaheim Ducks as of late this year. Mm-hmm. But they managed to find a way to win. Andre Pavlik was sensational. I tweeted out during that game. I thought that was arguably his best game of the year. I thought the San Jose game was a lot closer, but they lost. Richie mentioned the Olli Jokinen miscue that led to the goal. Joe Pavelski, who seems to score at will these days, second in the NHL in scoring. But the Jets over the last five games, and this has been talked about and mentioned by Shane Knighty on the post-game show, and I think it was very accurate. I think there is a bigger sense of urgency on this team. And
100%.
Now that the Jets are in a position where, and I know that right now the playoffs are still far away, mm-hmm. but they're still trying to win games. They're still trying to win games and do whatever they can to stay with the pack right now in the Western Conference. And yeah, sure, are they a long shot to make the playoffs? Yes. Are they going to have to win 5, 6, 7 games to have a legitimate shot at making the playoffs? Yes. But right now you win 4 games in a row. Not only do you win 4 games in a row, but you're competitive against another top mm-hmm. team in the West. It's impressive. They've played better defensively. And it's not like we haven't seen the Jets play well this year. I mean, they've beaten some good teams. They've gotten luck against some teams, but they've played well defensively and beaten some good teams. But we've seen that they've been able to put together 5 straight games. And I think the true test now is this back-to-back here. Like, pretty hard back-to-back if you think about it. Toronto might have lost their last game, but before that, they had won 6 in a row. Mm-hmm. So Toronto's a pretty good team. I still think they're going to make the playoffs. They're going to stick around. And then, of course, we don't need to really explain how good Chicago is. Everybody knows they're the defending Stanley Cup champions. So are they going to be able to not only pull off a win, but are they going to be able to be competitive in both those games?
The problem you have is, you know, the Jets have played well lately, but Nashville's gotten going a bit here, and Dallas is 3 points ahead of them and has played one last game. So there's a perspective of, okay, how is this team looking on an ongoing basis,
right,
most specifically really for next year,
yep.
and there's this year. Sure, they've played better for this year, but there's the reality that this team is 10 points out of the playoffs. Granted, they have a game in hand on Minnesota. They play the same amount of games as Vancouver. You know, Phoenix is a team that's obviously been struggling lately, although they won last night. So if you're realistically looking at this season, guys, you need to pass Nashville, Dallas, and Phoenix, and then you need to pass one of Vancouver or Minnesota. So that's 4 teams that you need to pass. They're going to be, you need to obviously win the division games coming up, but I mean, to play a team like Chicago as tomorrow night, even whatever happens in this game, difficult game. Chicago's been, you know, has been resting.
Yeah.
Really, you think, we're going to ask Scott Powers from ESPN about whether or not Duncan Keith will be back in the lineup, but the point is the games are running out, guys. I mean, they only have 2 more home games before the February break. So if you're looking at, again, as a Jets fan and saying, okay, next year, but there's still this year to play. So Paul Maurice is going to continue to try and affect change, and I think he's done that well so far. I think the issue is, how does it go when this team realizes, like, they still have a glimpse of the playoffs right now, but when they are, say, 12, 14 points out, or there's just not enough games to come back, and I still think they're going to play well for a bit here, then you want to see how they react to him. Do they say, oh, we're done? Or do they say, okay, let's continue to work hard for next year because we have a position to earn? Because there's still someone in it. We're still in January. That's the reality of the situation. End of February after the Olympics, early March, after the trade deadline.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. I mean, you have 3 key guys on your roster, Olli Jokinen, Devin Setoguchi, Mark Stewart, that are all pending UFAs. How does the team deal with that? Do they think they have a legitimate shot? You know, probably not. Do they deal all 3 of those guys? And if so, and we'll talk about this throughout the next few shows, what do they get for those guys? So there's a lot of moving parts here with the Jets, but short term, you have to be happy with what's happening.
Absolutely. I think you have to look at look at the positives. Since Paul Maurice has come in, the team is playing better in all aspects of the game, I would suggest. I mean, they're more responsible, and they're more competitive. I mean, you don't want to kick dirt on the legacy or the job that Claude Noel did in the city.
It's too early.
It's too early to, yeah.
It's too early to say.
To say one way or the other. But, you know, there were plenty of games against sort of upper echelon talent that the Jets just didn't seem to get up for and didn't seem to think they had a chance to win. But that's, you know, at least based on last week's games where they played against 2 better opponents, they hung in there, they won one game. They probably won the game they didn't deserve to win,
right,
whereas against San Jose,
right,
they probably, you know, had they put a goal past Stalock in the first period, it would have been a completely different game because they were the better of the 2 teams, I thought, in the first period in San Jose.
But we say coming into the season, the issue is, and in the season, team defense. How do they commit to defense? And so far, they're just committing to defense. That doesn't mean they're playing a perfect game at any point in time. And there still are defensive breakdowns, and they still need to work on that. But as they are playing better team defense, and look what's happening. Andre Pavlik's playing better. I don't think those two are mutually exclusive in any way.
They're never mutually exclusive, Richie, in hockey. They're always exclusive. And it's not just the defensemen, as you mentioned. It's the quality of goaltending you get. It's mm-hmm. the forwards mm-hmm. backchecking. I thought J.P. Vigier, our good friend who's on the station quite often, had a great article today in the Free Press on the whiteboard. He was talking about the forwards back-checking, and I think that the forwards have done a really good job of back-checking. They're starting to buy in as well. And, you know, these next four games are just as important, if not more important, than those previous five games, how they responded to the coaching change, because you've got tonight's game and the game against the Chicago Blackhawks, which are both going to be tough games, but then you've got two more Western teams that are ahead of you in the standings, but not elite teams at this point in the Canucks and the Predators.
Right.
So
three of four at home, and you know, starting tonight, and you honestly expect, you would probably expect to win, you could expect to win three of those four games.
Well, you can, Andrew, and you're right, because you have Toronto tonight. It's a team that if you want to make the playoffs or have somewhat of a chance, you have to beat them. Tomorrow, you assume they're going to lose just because Chicago's that good. Tuesday against Nashville and Friday against Vancouver, two of the four teams, four or five teams we just mentioned, they need to hop over to make the playoffs. So those are essentially must-win games.
The proverbial four-point games that you hear about. Now, it's not that simple because there's teams between them. But
doesn't matter.
At home ice, you have to win those games.
And those teams both cannot score.
Yeah.
I mean, they both are offensively challenged. So just offensively, their talent pool is just not there. So you have to be able to take advantage of it, because the Jets can score, guys.
Absolutely. That's what they can do. It's probably the thing they can do best, and they've tightened up on the defensive zone, which is the thing that they were doing the worst. So, you know, hopefully that means that the arrow is pointing in the right direction for this team. Let's go to break. When we come back, we'll talk more about the Jets and the Leafs. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
It's past 12 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day here on the station. The Jets and the Leafs, 6 p.m. puck drop. Reminder, every pizza that you order tonight from Santa Lucia Pizza, a portion of the proceeds goes to the Pass It Forward program that we certainly support here on TSN 1290, and we support on Illegal Curve and IllegalCurve.com. So if you're looking for a place to order a pizza from tonight, Santa Lucia Pizza, Pass It Forward. It's a good combination for everything to make everybody happy and give kids the opportunity to make hockey more accessible in Winnipeg.
I just ordered 25 pizzas, Drew.
Yeah, that's just your standard weekly order, though. You know, that's no different than anything else.
No, but in all seriousness, Kalen Qualley does a great job, and we've had him on the show before, and Pass It Forward is a great initiative. So support that. Come down and order a pizza, and know that your contributions are going to a good cause.
Exactly. Let's start breaking down tonight's Jets-Leafs game. And you look at the two teams, and, I mean, the Leafs are obviously in a playoff spot, primarily because they play in the more advantageous Eastern Conference. They're currently in the first wild card spot right there, 59 points on the year, a record of 27-21-5. A lot of their success comes from the shootout. They've won 9 games in the shootout this year, which I think might be tops in the NHL. I'm going to have to double-check on that.
It is tops, Drew.
It is tops in the NHL?
Washington has 8 wins in the shootout.
Okay, so the Leafs have been very good in the shootout.
So does San Jose.
They've been average in the regular season, of course. But good for the Leafs. And what do you think the key? You know, what's one of the keys that jump out to you for tonight's Jets-Leafs game, Richard?
Well, when you're playing a Toronto Maple Leafs team, you're playing a team that's very dangerous in transition. And by that, I mean there's a lot of skill up front and there's a lot of fast skill. You know, you play Getzlaff and Perry and you're dealing with cycle. You're dealing with board play. And when you're dealing with Toronto, you're dealing with speed off of not only the breakout, you're dealing with speed off of the neutral zone. So neutral zone turnovers are going to be very important today. And you have to ensure that you really limit those, Drew. And by that, I mean you get the puck into the offensive zone. And when you're playing around in the neutral zone, you don't try and make too many moves unless you're sure that pass will work. So if you look at that top line, Bozak, Kessel, and Van Rijn, like those guys can beat you. Bozak is a really good passer. He'll see the ice well. And Kessel and Van Rijn are quick strike guys, right? They can streak down the wing and they can beat you with speed. And they have a nice chemistry together, that line. So there's going to be a big job for the Jets to defend tonight. And, you know, when you talk about defend, you're talking about likely the Enstrom-Bogosian matchup for them. And both those guys can skate. So that should be a fine matchup for the Jets in terms of skating ability. I think the Jets actually match up quite well against Toronto. So if you can restrict Toronto's speed, I think that you're going to have a pretty good chance to win.
Yeah, Richie, you make a really good point. One of the fastest teams in the league,
yeah.
And that's why they kind of surprised a lot of people with where they finished in the Eastern Conference last year. It's a team that doesn't get a lot of offense from their defense as well. And this is a team that has had all types of problems. We're going to have Michael Trakos of the National Post on later. And we've talked about it quite a bit this year. This is a team that went out and they acquired Tim Gleason to kind of give them more of a stay-at-home physical presence, but really what they need is more speed from the back end. So this is a Leafs team that really gains their speed from their forwards in the neutral zone, and that top line to me is obviously the key to shutting down the Toronto Maple Leafs and winning this hockey game. It's one of the best lines in the NHL. Van Riemsdyk has 20 goals already. He's on pace for a career year, probably in between 35 and 40 goals, really. And Joffrey Leupold has struggled in his time back. Another guy that really deserves a lot of credit for how he's played since he's come back from injury is Tyler Bozak. Mm-hmm. When Nazem Kadri was playing first-line center, they had all types of problems in the face-off circle, and he's a smaller guy. Even though he's a skilled guy, if you saw the game last Saturday, Nazem Kadri had a beautiful pass to Cody Franzen, and so he's an excellent young hockey player, but I think since Bozak's been back, they've really kind of got back to where they were playing before that. They were able to get those six wins in a row, but again, you watch them against the Dallas Stars, and they've been good against the Western Conference, but this is a team that three times this year they've been beat by more than six goals. They've been smoked on several occasions, and it's a team that can break down defensively, and Jake Gardner, Morgan Rielly, they've had all types of problems, even Cody Franz and others in that lineup. Paul Ranger, who's not in the lineup.
Well, yeah, you look at like
but they've
Gardner,
had all types of problems.
A Gardner-Franz in combination, yeah, you wonder defensively if that tandem can handle the Jets' second line, for example. Right? I mean, that's something to take into account. Morgan Rielly's a talented young player, but again, you know, defensively, you know, it takes some time to get your bearings. And you look at the Leafs in terms of their forwards as well. Before, you know, I want to talk more about the Jets matchup with the Leafs defense. The Leafs forwards are not going to sustain a lot of pressure off the cycle, off of the forecheck, because they're just not, I mean, they're fast enough for the forecheck, but they're not big enough to continue to hold the puck on the boards and create time and space. So the Jets, it's their neutral zone play. Like, when you play against Anaheim or even San Jose, your center is so important because he's defending down low all game. This is not a team that's going to make you do that.
The Western, the San Jose and the Anaheims will grind you deep in the zone behind the goal line. They'll forecheck well.
Yeah, and that's not what the Leafs are going to do, right? They're going to come with speed, and they can do that at times, but not. They're not going to be able to sustain that type of pressure.
The Jets should almost adopt the keep it simple, stupid approach and put the puck in deep, and then you can go and be on the forecheck, as opposed to turnovers in the neutral zone on too many passes.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. Now, how often do the Jets really get a real sustained cycle for long periods of time? I mean, it happens. It's been happening a little bit more lately, but not a ton either. So these teams are similar to some extent. Now, if you look at the Jets forwards compared dealing with the Leafs defensemen, well, Phaneuf and Gunnarsson, I mean, you can take advantage of that. You can take advantage of all three of these pairings. And the Jets have three scoring lines now. That's been another key to their success. You know, you have Byfuglien up there. You have three lines. Kane back. Three lines. Nine players who can score. All of them can score. Now, ideally, you probably don't want Setoguchi on the other side and all that stuff, but they can score. So can these defensemen defend? And I'm not necessarily sure that the Leafs defensemen can provide sufficient defense to hold the Jets off the board. So I think the Jets, I think it's a higher scoring game today. I think you're probably looking at a 4-3 game. And I think the Jets are the team that, to me, they'd be the favorite tonight, and they should win.
Well, these are two teams that scored with a very similar amount. The Leafs scored 2.68 goals per game. The Jets are right behind them at 2.67 goals per game. And for all the talk about the Jets and their, you know, and their bad, you know, goals against and their bad defense in their own zone, the Leafs actually give up the most. I think it's the second most goals per game in the entire league. The fourth most. 27th in the league. They give up 3 goals per game. To your point there, Richard, about it, you expect it to be a higher scoring game today.
Well, and Richie, as well, this has been the Achilles heel of the Toronto Maple Leafs the entire year. They give up a lot of goals, they give up a lot of shots, and this is a team that loves to score off of the rush, but what they do is they give up a lot of scoring chances the other way. And that's kind of the issue here, and what has really been the difficulty with Randy Carlyle. And again, you look at some of the players they have out of the lineup, those were the guys that were supposed to kind of be the gritty guys on the second and third line that were going to be the guys that kind of established the cycle and the forecheck. Obviously, David Clarkson and Dave Boland, who have been in and out of the lineup, both are out of the lineup
hurt,
tonight and won't play. So this is a team, it's not a very physical team, and, you know, the Toronto Maple Leafs give up a lot of shots, and the goaltending, which has really been the strength of the team the entire year, and why everyone was looking at the advanced stats, if you believe in that at all, and you were seeing that they were giving up so many shots, the possession numbers were so low, but the goaltending hasn't been there, and James Reimer will play tonight, but Jonathan Bernier struggled, still both excellent goaltenders in my opinion, but they've really not... They've been bailing them out all year, and they haven't been bailing them out as much as of late. But again, this is a team that comes in six wins out of their last seven games. So the Toronto Maple Leafs, even though they've played the most games in the entire league, are still fifth in the Eastern Conference. So this is still a very good team, and the Jets are going to have to play well defensively. But I think, you know, Richie mentions that for the first time all season, the Jets are rolling out three forward lines. And that's what Dustin Byfuglien on forward will do for you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what he's done. Setoguchi, maybe you don't want him on the left wing.
But it's better, better than other alternatives.
He's more effective at this point in time.
And then you look at the Leafs, you mentioned no Clarkson, no Bolin. They don't have three lines that can score right now. That's part of their coming into season was that they would have three lines. Right now they don't have three lines, and that hurts them.
Yep, and Joffrey Lupul and Nazem Kadri have played together the last couple years, but they're not having the level of success that they did last year. And really right now this is a one-line team. And the good thing for the Toronto Maple Leafs is it's one of the best lines in the entire league. So you know, it's going to be obviously a team effort, and they're going to have to shut down not only one line, but if you look at the way they've played, Kessel comes in here. You know, before the last, I think he had 14 points in the six wins.
Yeah,
14 points. So I mean, that's incredible, guys.
Well, anyway, we got to go to break here. We got our guests right now in Boston Pizza. But when you talk about, you know, turning it over, I want to expand quickly. When you talk about turning it over in the neutral zone, that's one factor. It's also defending in the neutral zone on the breakout. And I mentioned that before. But when you're Jets, you have to get bodies on Kessel and Van Riemsdyk quickly. You know, Bozak is not going to be a guy who Bozak gets the puck to his scorers. Like that's why he's a good play center. He gets a puck to his wingers who can skate. You need to put a body on Van Riemsdyk and a body on Kessel as soon as those guys touch the puck in the neutral zone. You better be on them quick.
To limit their speed.
Limit their speed, limit their space, make them dump it in. They probably get to it quick, but when you get on them in the boards, you're going to be able to muscle them off the puck.
Let's go to break. We'll come back to the Leafs and the Jets game in about after the next segment. When we come back, though, we're going to be joined by our friends from Veritas Hockey, Tom Lynn and Kyle Kozier. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to The Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Live from Boston Pizza City Place, this is The Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Winnipeg Jets game day as the Jets and the Leafs. Puck drop 6 p.m. tonight at MTS Center, a game you can hear live on TSN 1290. Pleased to be joined at Boston Pizza now by our, we got a Go Leafs chant going on here at Boston Pizza. We'll see. Wow, it's getting rowdy. It's only 12:30 in the afternoon, and it's getting rowdy here at Boston Pizza City Place. On my left, one of the original founders, in the interest of full disclosure, one of the original founders of IllegalCurve.com, Kyle Kozier. On my right, Tom Lynn, both of whom are now from Veritas Hockey. Gentlemen, good afternoon. Thanks very much for coming down and joining us at Boston Pizza. Yeah,
thanks for having us, guys.
I'd like to say it's my pleasure, but last time I was here, I was GM of the Houston Aeros, and we were in the midst of losing to the Moose in the 2009 Western Conference Finals.
That's the year, of course, the Moose went to the Calder Cup Finals and were defeated by the Hershey Bears in six games.
Yeah.
So, you know, what's your good memory? Times. So, what's your memory of Winnipeg? We'll start with that. That's
cold.
The last time you were in Winnipeg?
Yes, and Mark Chipman is great. He was not only with the Jets, but he was with the team as well. And he's
right.
Always a gracious host. But it was cold, and I remember the travel was always bad because we had those games. You know, the AHL gives you short-term scheduling. So it's kind of like, how do we get from Houston to there and back, games 3, 4, 5, and then going into 6. And the travel wasn't good, and we were afraid the equipment wouldn't make it on the commuter jets they send you through. Because they'll send you through and then say, oh, your bag will be there tomorrow. Well, no, we've got a game tonight. You know, it's not like the NHL and charter jet. So that was a series of a lot of mechanics behind the scenes. But, boy, your guys did a great job. Mark's team's always did a great job there.
Absolutely. Now, you guys are sort of doing a tour of Western Canada right now, looking for some players for that, obviously, signing up to be represented by Veritas Hockey. You know, not so much specifics, but, you know, when you're going out and you're scouting, what are you looking for? What's the sort of what sort of attributes are initially that jump off the page, or when you're watching a player perform, what are you looking to see from a young potential prospect?
I guess for me, it really kind of depends on the age range of the kid. You know, right now we're looking at kids as young as 99 borns, and at that age, you realize they're not physically developed, or, you know, in most cases, they're not physically developed. So really just kind of looking for what kind of hockey sense they have. You know, are they thinking the game well? And then factoring into that, that you really hope they can learn most of the other skills. But again, you know, what is their knowledge of the game, and how can they apply that on the ice? And, of course, that changes a little bit as you're looking at kids that might be a little older. But, you know, for the kids, say, on this trip, in that 97 to 99 age range, for me, that's, you know, what we're taking a look at.
Now, Tom, you've been around the game, obviously, for years prior to joining up with Veritas Hockey, mm-hmm. or founding Veritas Hockey. You were the assistant general manager of the Minnesota Wild. Of course, you were the general manager of the Houston Aeros, as you just mentioned. You know, how has the game changed, or what you're looking for, changed over the course of your involvement in hockey? Or is it still pretty much you're looking for the same attributes that you were, say, 15 years ago?
It's changed markedly. And I often use the 1997 draft as the turning point. Now, it isn't the actual turning point, but anything that's gathering steam after a while, you know, you got to demarcate, and here's where we break off from. But it used to be they looked to athleticism. You know, Rico Fada was the last of those old picks. Fastest skater, take him second overall. Zero hockey sense, gets to the wrong place in the league faster than anyone else, you know. and a good guy, but that's not the kind of guy you draft nowadays. Nowadays, top players from the age of 15 or 16 on have wonderful advisors and agents like us.
But yes, of course.
They guide them through skill development, physical development. They have personal trainers. They might even have, you know, psych coaches. So you're looking for hockey sense and hockey attributes. How is this player going to be at the next level? Because years ago, you wanted that athleticism to say he can beat someone one-on-one. Nowadays, everyone's going to build up those attributes. So as Kyle mentioned, hockey sense from the early ages will be the differentiating factor on who makes it in the end and who doesn't.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Kyle Kozier and Tom Lynn of Veritas Hockey live at Boston Pizza City Place. Now, Kyle and I were talking off-air yesterday or something, and you know, I asked him sort of, and he mentioned Corsi. And we know that there's sort of the butting of the heads between the new school who believe in the quote-unquote fancy stats, and then there's the old school who are, you know, use the eyeball test primarily more than anything. Mm-hmm. Where do you guys fall in that? How do you guys sort of evaluate a player using a combination of new school and old school?
Well, I'd say, you know, even in-house, Kyle falls in a new school more than I did. But just to give you an idea of relativity, when I was working with an NHL team, I was in the forefront of new stats, mainly because they hadn't been developed yet.
Sure.
So, you know, Moneyball, by the time Moneyball came out, we were doing our own things in-house at the Wild and trying to gather stuff. But the real stats, the NHL wouldn't give them to us. We had to scrape them, put them into spreadsheets, do it all that. You know, there were mistakes and everything else. Now they flow. So in the beginning, it was great because those things told you stuff you didn't know. Just, wow. We thought, you know, give you one concrete example. Do we have to re-sign Pierre-Marc Bouchard for Brian Rolston to keep scoring? He had 30 goals back 06-07. Boom, boom, look it up. When he's on the ice, who's on the ice with. You know, PMB only had, I think, three or four first assists on all of Brian's goals. But to us, it was kind of like he sets them up. But that's where the stats were starting to back it up. Fast forward to later on, everyone's got advanced stats. It's 2012-13. How do you, you know, the key to winning this game is how do you differentiate yourself from the competition? So you got to do what everyone else is doing, but how do you do it differently? And now I think the next key will be applying stats like Corsi, stepping back from them, and how can you get an edge on the other guys? If everyone's following Corsi, it becomes a computer program, right?
Right.
There's no more, you know.
No, there's nothing proprietary
right.
about that.
So good example, Jacques Lemaire's early Wild teams and Hitchcock's success in Columbus when he went there and what have you, they would be anti-stats guys in that they knew they didn't have the hands to compete with possession teams like San Jose and Detroit and what have you. So they played a great positional game, tried to force shots to the outside and just hang in there until the other team made a turnover and it could score. Well, that would look very poor Corsi-wise. And yet the win-loss record could look pretty good. So you're going to have anomalies like that. Let's say Corsi's right 85% of the time. That's great for a statistic. But that still means you might miss a team that makes the conference finals.
Sure.
With a poor Corsi.
Now, Kyle, you're the new school guy. So, you know, talk about your, you know, how does Corsi and the new stats sort of influence you and when you're looking at a player? And, you know, when you're looking at these guys who are young, you know, you're talking about 14, 15, 16-year-olds, there's obviously not Corsi readily available. So how do you sort of do the eyeball test and Corsi and put it all into one package?
You know, like Tom mentioned, because those statistics are not available to us, especially for the younger guys, you know, I was just telling Ezra, we have a prospect playing high school hockey and they have him down with 12 goals and 12 shots, so, you know, 100 shooting percentage. So, I mean, stuff like that's going to throw you. But so you really kind of have to mix the eyeball with the Corsi and, like Tom said, scrape those statistics. You have to keep them yourself or have an intern do it as best you can and realize you're not probably getting the full picture there. But, you know, for our business, it's sort of an interesting thing to follow at the pro level. And for us, you really have to kind of mix some of the eyeball test and get to know the kid a little bit too, and try and combine the two, because you can't really, we can't pick players just based on their statistics. We have to find out what kind of kid they are and what the family's like. So for me, it's, you know, going forward, hopefully, you know, if it catches on to a degree where, you know, younger leagues are keeping track of those stats, I think it'll be a very useful tool going forward. And I think right now is a good time to become familiar with it and learn how to use it properly, so you're ready going forward when those stats are hopefully available.
KK, you mentioned earlier that Veritas Hockey is currently scouting 14, 15, 16-year-olds, and then obviously you guys also work with some players that are 18, 19, 20, older than that. As far as after the junior age, after it becomes to the point where you're either going to go pro or go to college, how do you, I guess, begin the process of advising players as far as what route is best for them? Because obviously here in Winnipeg, Mark Scheifele, after playing the max amount of years for the Barry Colts, it was kind of a decision that was pretty obvious that he was going to make the Winnipeg Jets and not go to the AHL. But as far as players that are kind of in that development stage where they're not sure if they should go to college, go get a degree, or maybe if they should play in the United States Hockey League, spend one more year in junior, how do you guys... It's interesting to me how you guys advise players on how they should approach that, how that's going to be best kind of for their long-term professional career.
Well, for us, it really kind of boils down to, we try not to make the decisions for the kid. We try and give them as much information as possible and let them decide. And, you know, in some cases, maybe a little bit of a gentle steer. You know, on the college route, you know, the fact of the matter is not every kid is well-suited to go to college and play hockey at the same time. And, you know, perhaps a kid that's more advanced really would benefit from going to the Western League and learning or playing that NHL-style system and then going pro sooner. So it really kind of just boils down to the individual at that point. And, you know, and Tom always stresses that, just give them the information. And, you know, most times deep down somewhere they know which way they want to go, and it's just a matter of laying it on the table and letting them see it. So it's just really a stewardship more or less than a decision-making process. And, you know, perhaps Tom can elaborate a little further.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we go into labor mode. Excuse me, lawyer mode.
Well, hang on. I'm surrounded. We got Richie as a lawyer, and you're both lawyers here. So I'm not feeling totally comfortable right now.
Flexing my lawyer muscles.
I'm just trying to, where's my wallet? I'm just trying to make sure I got that in my pocket.
It's all credit cards nowadays. We take credit cards.
Oh, you take credit cards now. Okay.
No, but it's where the lawyer part comes in. I think it's important that we're lawyers. But just like, you know, take it out of the hockey context. If you come to me as a client and say, I want to sue this bar because of something that happened, I might say to you privately, you know what, you got an 8% chance of success. But if you want to sue, you know, we'll go through it, and or if you want to do a deal, whatever it is, I'll give you the right advice. So we give the clients advice, and they might say, I want to do X, Y, or Z. We'll tell them what the percentage chance are based on our own experience, objective factors, where their thing is. They make the decision, we support them. Now, it's not always great, and I never use names. We had a client in the last few months decide to sign with the team, and I told him, I said, I wouldn't do it, but I'll do it for you, you know, and I'll be right there watching you. And he did. And God bless him. That's the way it goes. But we just try to give advice.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. Listen online, tsn1290.ca. Joined at Boston Pizza City Place by Kyle Kozier and Tom Lynn, both of whom are with Veritas Hockey. Now, Tom, before you came on, we were talking off air, and you got something on your chest. You said, I have a Jim Rome rant in me about about the Olympic ice surface. Is
yes.
that right?
No, that is true. Going back to the last Olympics especially, but in Minnesota you had a bunch of part-time hockey guys, you know, the sports writers that don't cover the game full-time, and some guys who do don't cover it close enough. They watch the Olympics and they'll write columns afterwards every time. It's going to happen again. Why don't we have the Olympic ice surface in the NHL? You know, look at that exciting game. Did you see the gold medal game? And I just want to take them and say, you know what? You want to see Olympic ice surface? Go to Germany or Russia in the middle of January and see two teams playing that don't have Olympians on them. Because you could put those Olympians on an ice surface the size of a tennis court. It'd be a great game, right?
Sure.
But go over there and watch your average game where it's 2-1 with 11 shots for one team and 17 for the other, because they play a possession game on the outside like the old Princeton basketball offense the whole time, and they wait for good scoring chances.
When there's no shot clock, you never have to give up the puck.
All the goals come from within 40 feet of the net. You can make it as big as a football field or anything else, but no one's going to chase Pavel Datsyuk 40 feet away from the net. They're going to stand there at the face-off dots because they tell the D, don't go outside the dots. Doesn't change the game that much. It's the quality of the players that are there, and we should focus on the quality of the game and not worry about making the ice surface bigger and more boring.
Well, it's funny you mention that, because we had Ralph Kruger on the show about a month ago, give or take.
Yeah.
And Ralph Kruger, we were talking about the Olympic ice surface and the change, and Ralph Kruger pretty much said he instructs, you know, when he'll talk to the Canadian Olympians, right, he'll almost instruct them to ignore everything from, you know, the outside of the face-off circle to the boards, because
right,
nothing bad is ever going to come from there. It's only going to be bad if you chase over there and then they get past you and they get into the scoring zone.
Exactly. So to all your fans out there, when you read those columns after the Olympics about how we need Olympic ice surface to have that, they'll already know the answer.
Well, fortunately here in Winnipeg, our columnists are hockey experts, so they won't have to write anything like that.
We know that you guys are going to Brandon, so just before we go to commercial break here, we wanted to ask you about one of the players that you're working with, Jesse Gabriel,
right,
of the Brandon Wheatkings. How has his season been going so far, and what does the future look like for him with the Brandon Wheatkings and beyond?
Well, Jesse's one of the most interesting players I've worked with because he's physically ahead of his time. He played Minnesota. His mother's going to school down there, so he played Minnesota in high school there, and as a freshman was a dominant player down there, which is very unusual because Minnesota high schools, you got guys up till 19. Basically 14, 19, but most players are 18 or 19. And so here's this kid dominating there. So he wanted to go major junior and get in there, and he did. And Brandon, we expected to be in a rebuilding year, as everyone thought, has turned out to be maybe a first-place team. So for a young guy to work in, he's battling some very good players. Two of them are ranked in the top 100 for the draft there coming up. So it's a great battle to watch. I like coming in to watch Brandon games because they have a better team than people thought. They have that great thing when you don't have expectations, but you have winning going on, and Jesse gets to be a part of that. And next year is his draft year, so he's getting ready for that because next year he's going to push very hard to be drafted high, and this year he's learning a lot from the guys who are there.
I think with Kelly McCrimmon, he always seems to have gets the best out of his players and has a really good track record in the WHL for sure.
Yeah.
Before we let you guys go, I'm going to cause a little bit of controversy, a little bit of trouble. Tom, you're an American, so I assume you're going to be cheering for the United States at the upcoming Olympic Games.
Well, the one player we have playing plays for Russia. One Veritas guy in there.
Oh, who's that?
Viktor Tikhonov.
Oh, okay. So there.
Yeah.
So
his dad was, of course,
yeah,
the
of
famous
course.
Grandfather
yeah.
was somewhat famous.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. We've heard his name a couple times.
Yeah.
Now, Kyle, you're from Saskatchewan originally. We won't hold that against you.
God's country.
Yeah, God's country. Sure. You now live down in Grand Forks.
Richie was just there. It's beautiful.
That's right. Richie was in Saskatchewan this past week. Are you waving the Canadian flag or are you waving the American flag? And how's that going to go over
the Saskatchewan flag
in the homestead when the Olympics start?
Kunitz and Getzlaff, there's some Saskatchewan boys in there.
The Rough Riders flag is always flying, the Saskatchewan flag most of the time, but I'm running up several different versions of the Canadian flag from the Red Ensign up to the current Maple Leaf.
Whoa,
My young son is decked out in Maple Leafs from head to toe, so I'm
no, no, no.
I'm
hang on, when you, all when you say Maple Leafs, you don't mean Toronto Maple Leafs, you mean Canadian Maple Leafs.
I do not mean Toronto Maple Leafs, but for full disclosure, as an Oilers fan, I've taken to watching Toronto Maple Leafs games just to feel good about myself for a while.
There you go.
Really?
It's out there now.
I have a proposal, though, because I'm an outsider. The Maple Leafs, although owned by teachers for a long time, are grammatically incorrect. It's embarrassment to the country, really. When you refer to the red Maple Leaf, as it were, that represents a country, maybe we'll call them the Maple Leaves, and then you'll always know what you're talking about.
As long as you don't,
that seems reasonable.
It's out there now.
As long as you don't bring up 4-1 lead, I think
we're
going to be okay.
I'll tell you what, the Maple Leafs have been grammatically incorrect, and they've been incorrect on the ice since 1967, so they got a lot of problems they need to deal with.
I'm a 2014 vintage Leafs fan, so it's all new to me, so I have none of the past heartbreak in me, so I'm an optimist. Yeah.
There you go. Kyle Kozier on my left, Tom Lynn on my right, both of whom are from Veritas Hockey. Guys, thanks very much for coming down and joining us. We'll see you in Philly at the draft.
Always a pleasure,
we'll
for sure.
Terrific, guys. Thanks very much. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Let's go to break. You're listening to TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290, online TSN1290.ca. I'm just thankful they're still chanting Go Leafs Go. You know, we're going to have to get some Jets fans down here to Boston Pizza quickly. Come on, Jets fans. You're being overtaken by a rowdy group of Leafs fans at the bar. I don't know. We're not sure about how that's going to work. So get some Jets fans down here to Boston Pizza City Place. You can join us, the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We'll be here till 3 p.m. Hustler and Lawless following us at from 3 to 5. And then Rick Ralph and the Don Vito Collision and Glass pregame power hour from 5 until 6 today on TSN 1290.
Drew, I thought those guys were just cheering, go IC, go.
Yeah.
Go IC, go.
Later on in the game, in the day, that'll be their chant. Always nice to catch up with our friends from Veritas Hockey, Tom and Kyle. Jamie Dial also was here. He wasn't on air. Richie, you were yapping it up with him before off air there. So that was a lot of fun always catching up with those guys.
Always good friends. KK, we're going to see him in a couple of weeks. Richie and I are going to go down there and watch a UND game down there at Ralph Engelstad, and it's always good friends of the show, and it's really interesting. Those guys watch a ton of hockey. We think we watch a lot of hockey, but it's mainly NHL hockey, but those guys are watching every level of hockey, college hockey, bantam-level hockey, USHL, so it's always good to have them on.
Absolutely. Gives a different perspective of the game. Going back to the Leafs and the Jets, Michael Trakos from the National Post will join us at the top of the hour. You know, one of the things I think that's going to be a key to tonight's game is the special teams battle. Because you look at the Leafs, and when it comes to the penalty kill, and this has been an ongoing problem going back to even the Ron Wilson days for the Leafs, the penalty kill for the Leafs, absolutely atrocious. I think it's right at the bottom of the NHL, if I'm not mistaken. I'm just going to pull it up right now.
It's 27th in the NHL. I wrote a preview for the site, Legal Curve, today. And I think it's about 26th or 27th.
Down to 29th, looks like, after the Dallas game. 77.5% is their success rate on the penalty kill. But then you look at their power play.
Refresh your browser, Drew.
Refresh my browser.
No, I'm just kidding.
Okay. I just refreshed it. Then you look at their power play, and again, it's at the top of the NHL, which is, you know, not terribly surprising given that they have some dynamic offensive talent. Fourth in the NHL, 22.5% success rate. So I think the key, the Winnipeg Jets have to be especially conscious not to be taking penalties today against the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Yeah, I mean, Drew, their PK was second in the league last year, so it hasn't been continuous. I mean, the Ron Wilson era, they did struggle on special teams, and that was well documented. But last year, they were very strong on the PK, and this year, they haven't been as strong. You talk about that PK, and I think in respect to the Jets, the Jets' power play needs to take advantage. And you saw them this morning at the skate. They're working on the power play. Certain things that they want to do, making sure they get traffic in front and get shots from the net and shots from the point, excuse me, shots through. And you want to be able to support the defense. And I think one thing you're also seeing with the Jets is the idea of trying to support the puck a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Shorter passes, making sure guys are close by, not huge gaps. A lot of times you see huge gaps sometimes with the Jets. So, I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not all Claude Noel's fault. The players were still playing, and they were all the same. But they're just things they're trying to work on now. So the Leafs PK is something that you have to take advantage of. And in a game with this kind of speed, you're going to see a few tripping penalties or a few hooking penalties just to be able to, you know, Mark Stewart, not the fastest guy, or certain guys on the Leafs, you know, sometimes they lack foot speed. You know, Cody Franzen can move, not the fastest guy in the world. Tough, good offensively, but guys like that, sometimes when you get beat wide, you'll be hooking and holding. So you'll probably see a few penalties like that, and then you got to take advantage of that opportunity.
Absolutely. It's really truly amazing how that penalty kill has fallen from one of the top PKs in the league, Richie.
Yeah.
And that's been one of the major issues that Randy Carlyle has had with this team, trying to get the most out of this group, because this team is really weak defensively. It's one of the weaker defensive teams in the NHL. And it's really troubling for that group. It's troubling for Dave Nonis when he looks at this Toronto Maple Leafs team and he sees Phil Kessel's having an unbelievable year. James Van Riemsdyk, I've said earlier in this year, I think he's an emerging superstar. He's still very young, if not already a superstar. Kessel and Van Riemsdyk, of course, are going to be big parts of that American Olympic team. And you look at the team and you have pretty good goaltending. No, I wouldn't say pretty good goaltending. I'd say very mm-hmm. good goaltending in Reimer and Bernier. And you have a team right now that is kind of, with the exception of the six-game winning streak, they lost the last game, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
The six-game winning streak before that, this is a team that really hasn't taken off the way they should have. This should be a team that really is entrenched as a top four, top five Eastern team. And again, we should mention
You really
that,
believe that?
Well, yeah, I do.
Even with their defensive shortcomings?
I do think this is a good enough team. I think I predicted at the beginning of the year they'd be sixth or seventh, and I don't think I'll change that. I don't think they're going to crack the top four this year. I do still think they'll end up making the playoffs because they have a favorable schedule. We went over that last week. But this is a team right now that really struggles when there's sustained pressure, and they struggle with turnovers in their own zone. And really, if you think about it, it's a very inexperienced defense. And Richie mentioned, you know, the matchups, and everybody's looking at Kessel, Bozak, and Van Riemsdyk, but you also look at that Kadri-Lupo line, and to me, that line really hasn't been as effective as it has in the past, and that's when you're talking about Mark Stewart and Jacob Trouba being able to take advantage of that. Mm-hmm. And I think you're going to see Jacob Trouba, again, that Western road trip, we talked about it in the first segment. I think really this is the type of game that he's going to get up for, and he's going to be jumping into the play because the Leafs don't have a lot of guys that jump up into the rush, and that's something that the Jets can do, and I think they will do. And again, I think it is, I agree with Richie, this isn't going to be a low-scoring game, and I also think it's going to be rough game in the sense that these are two teams right now that really they're Western Conference team versus an Eastern Conference team. They don't see each other very often. But the Leafs are coming in here right now, and they need this win because they're thick and really in the thick of the playoff race right now. And again, when you have a team that's coming off an embarrassing loss like that, not only are they angry and testy, they're vulnerable. And that means that they could open themselves up to... You look at Carter Ashton, Colton Orr on the bottom line, fourth line there, and they're going to be bringing some stuff of the rough nature to Winnipeg. So, I think it is a close matchup, as Richie mentioned, but it's also, I think, a matchup that's favorable for the Jets because of the fact that they have a lot of guys struggling.
I believe Fraser McLaren also set to return to the Leafs lineup tonight against the Jets as well.
I'm not sure, dude. I haven't seen the final. I know he was out for the skate, the game day skate, and he was... they were doing a fair amount of drills, him, Mark Fraser, with Jonathan Bernier, so I'm not sure if that was him being a scratch tonight.
He's back healthy is what I meant. So
okay, yeah, I'm not sure if that was... I wasn't sure the status. Usually you see the hometown guys get in, but, you know, as you mentioned, it's a must-win game. Not must-win, but it's an important game for the Leafs, and they probably will prioritize, you know, production or what they think is the best lineup over, you know, the fact that the guy's from town.
Yeah. Let's go to break. When we come back, Michael Trakos from the National Post is going to join us, talk a little bit more about the Toronto Maple Leafs. 1 hour down, 2 hours to go. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live on TSN 1290.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Five hours to game time here on Santa Lucia Pizza, Winnipeg Jets game day on TSN 1290. This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on... still chanting it here. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and NHL news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show hotline.
We welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show our very good friend from the National Post, Michael Trakos. Michael, good afternoon, and thanks very much for joining us.
Hey, guys. How's it going there today?
Yeah, doing very well. You didn't want to come down to Winnipeg in January? Is that the problem? You just didn't make it on your preferred vacation list?
Yeah, actually, you know what? We've got Winnipeg-type weather right now in Toronto, so it's kind of funny. I can't really say that I can't make fun of the weather in Winnipeg anymore. I guess everyone's kind of feeling it these days in Canada and I guess the U.S.
Michael, you should have really come down here to Boston Pizza City Place because we've got a good crowd here, and I think 80% of them are Leafs fans, and I think they just started cheering because they knew that you were coming on the air with us.
I just heard that. That's hilarious.
Michael obviously brought you on to talk about the Leafs ahead of tonight's Leafs-Jets game here at MTS Center. Thursday night in Dallas, obviously a slightly disappointing performance, to put it mildly, for the Leafs. The blowout in that game notwithstanding, though, how did the Leafs team pull off a six-game winning streak?
No, that's funny. Before we go on there, you know what the funniest part of that whole Dallas Stars-Toronto Maple Leafs game was? During the game, I guess to rile up the Leaf fans that might have been in attendance or just even to rile up the guys on the bench, They at one point flashed Justin Bieber's mugshot photo on the Jumbotron.
Which is brilliant.
Yeah, which is brilliant. Yeah.
And then another time they had a thing just kind of mocking Rob Ford saying, and I think they had him in the Leafs jersey saying, oh, here's another Toronto Maple Leafs fan. So I wonder if the Jets will kind of do the same and just kind of, this will be kind of an ongoing thing with Toronto Maple Leafs because, like you just mentioned, you guys have a lot of Leafs fans there at the Boston Pizza, and there's probably going to be a ton of the game tonight, and that has been the case. So maybe this is a way to kind of counteract the whole Leaf Nation implosion when the Leafs are on the road.
It certainly could do the trick. We obviously, before we were talking about the Justin Bieber video or screenshot in Dallas, and Ezzy revealed that he's actually related to Justin Bieber, apparently.
Well, we don't know that I'm related, but my grandmother's maiden name actually is Bieber, so we'll get into that. Michael, I'll have to check out ancestry.ca after the show.
And Michael, when you look at this Leafs team, of course, they go on that six-game winning streak, and before that, they're struggling with the losing streak. Is this a case of this team is somewhere in the middle, or should we be buying into the losing streak more than the winning streak, or vice versa?
You know, yeah, I think that they're somewhere in the middle. This is kind of a funny team where if they're going to win games, it's going to be real tight, and a lot of their wins come out of the shootout. or just one goal games. But then when they lose, this is a team that loses big. And I kind of wrote about it today in today's National Post, saying that it's almost become a high wire act when you watch the Leafs. If they get a win, you're almost kind of holding your breath for the whole third period. And if it's a loss, they come crashing down real early, real fast. And it's just a big catastrophe. So I do think that if the goaltending's on, and the goaltending has been on for most of the year, and if that top line with Kessel, Tyler Bozak, and James Van Riemsdyk is clicking, they are a tough team to beat. And that's how they've been kind of getting their wins, and also because of the special teams. But if any of those facets kind of goes by the wayside, then it's game over.
Michael, we got another little Leafs chant going here. So obviously, these boys are enjoying the interview here. But you know, getting back
and the beer,
and the beer obviously, and the pizza. And again, last time we had you on the show, I think it was about 2 months ago. We were asking you about the goaltending situation, James Reimer and Jonathan Bernier. You mentioned that you didn't believe that James Reimer was actually going to be a Leaf by the end of the season. Has anything changed? Do you think Reimer is still not going to be a Leaf by the time the trade deadline rolls around?
I think a lot has changed, actually. And I think the big thing that's changed is how much they've had to rely on both guys. And granted, Jonathan Bernier has been kind of carrying the ball of late. But in the same sense, I think you're going to need both guys down the stretch. This is a team that's got, I think, four more back-to-back games coming up after the Olympic break. And with every team, I think the schedule is so hairy that you need two goalies. And the other big thing, I was talking to Dave Nonis, the GM, last week, and he was just mentioning to me that just the trade market just isn't there right now for goaltenders. I mean, you look at Jonas Hiller is probably going to be available. Ryan Miller is probably going to be available at some point this season or in the offseason. And what does that mean for guys like James Reimer? Well, where is the value there? And you look at Ben Scrivens and how cheaply he was had for the Edmonton Oilers. I just don't see the goalie market as being something where you're going to be willing to part with a guy who is a 1A or 1B just for the sake of getting maybe a second-round pick or something of that ilk.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. We're joined by Michael Trakos of the National Post. Michael, obviously the Leafs, it's been a few weeks now. They signed Dion Phaneuf to that large contract extension. Sort of a two-part question. First part, what did you think of the contract extension and the terms involved? And how has he played since receiving the new contract?
Yeah, I don't have a huge problem with the term or the money value just because always two things. One, there really aren't any other options for the Leafs. You look at free agency this summer and there's not another Dion Phaneuf out there that can log the kind of minutes that he's getting. And the other point of that is the salary cap is going up. So even though it is a healthy contract in terms of the dollar value, $7 million a year, well, if the cap's going up, that really kind of goes down in a bit how much Dion is taking up of that contract. So I don't have that big of a problem with it. Now, that being said, the guy's not earning his money lately. Like, he was one of their worst players, and there was a lot of suspects or candidates in terms of who was the worst player against the Dallas Stars the other night, but Dion was just horrible. And really, since the Winter Classic, he hasn't really looked that great. You could argue that Tim Gleason has been a far better just defensive presence back there for the Leafs right now, and he was a huge pickup for them coming over from Carolina. And even guys like Morgan Rielly, I thought, have really kind of upped their game lately, and really kind of give a lot of promise for the future as to who could be that next kind of puck-moving guy. And the one thing, the one criticism on Dion Phaneuf this year is just his offense. And he's not nearly putting up the same amount of points that he has in the past. And I think he's actually on pace for a career low in goals and points. And it's getting to the point now where you could actually see him off the number one power play unit, which is a huge thing when you think about how much money he is making this year and next year.
You mentioned, you know, Michael, you mentioned Tim Gleason and that acquisition for John Michael Lyles, right? You know, when the Winter Classic took place, Lyles was a smaller guy, he could move the puck, and Gleason's a different player. Is this trade a product of the Leafs needing more guys or that kind of guy who can play defensively and be more of a shutdown defenseman that fits Randy Carlyle's system?
Oh, for sure. And really, they don't make the trade for Tim Gleason if either Mark Fraser or Paul Ranger are the players that they thought they were going to be this year. And both guys have been a bit of a disappointment. Going back to Fraser, he's dealt with some knee injuries, and a guy that wasn't mobile to begin with has looked even worse. And he's been a healthy scratch for most of the year. And Paul Ranger, they had him penciled in as your second pairing defenseman, a guy who could provide offense but also be really physical down low. And he's also been a huge disappointment in terms of unable to make that jump from the minors to the pro level and back to where he was when he was a Tampa Bay defenseman years ago. So because of both those guys, I think you really necessitated a guy like Tim Gleason coming up who could play on the PK in your final minutes and be a guy who's blocking shots and that. He's never going to be, I don't think, that guy who made the U.S. Olympic team 4 years ago, but he's been really good in terms of just, I think he's averaging now close to 20 minutes a game, where in Carolina he was down to like 14, 15 minutes, and also dealing with being a healthy scratch at times too. So I think it's a great chance for him just to kind of get a new change of scenery. And obviously, like you said, he's a Randy Carlyle type guy, real meat and potatoes type defenseman. And with all the puck movers that they have back there, he's been able to really balance it out for them.
Wait. When you look at Tyler Bozak, Michael, you know, I was watching TSN this week, and I guess the narrative happened to be, you know, is he a number one center? He's been playing great between Kessel and Van Riemsdyk. Certainly him and Kessel are good friends. That's been well documented, and he has a good chemistry with both players. I mean, I think probably that narrative seems a little bit extreme to me, but how has he been better than you thought this year? Maybe face-off success notwithstanding, and do you see if you had to say there's a ceiling on his, you know, ability, what do you think that would be?
It's funny because you mentioned Tyler Bozak on Twitter, and it's just the amount of hate you get for this guy. it's almost kind of like when you mentioned Dion Phaneuf, and it's just a real polarizing player for the Leafs. And I think part of that is because he's got such talented wingers in Kessel and Van Riemsdyk, where at times he looks like he's the number one center just because, well, you could put anyone in there. Like, the perfect analogy I've heard a couple times was people were calling that line weekend at Bernie's, where both guys were really propping up the dead guy in the middle.
It's like Steve Ruchin kind of, you know?
Exactly. So, but to Tyler's credit, I'm going to get a lot of hate over this, I think he's been really good defensively for that line because it allows those two wingers to kind of be offensive guys. Mm-hmm. And you look at his point production, and he's almost at a point per game, which is, had he been healthy this year and had he been able to continue it for 82 games, he would have been a 70 to 80 point guy. And granted, he's going to go through his ups and downs, but if you get 50, 60 points out of Tyler Bozak, and he's going to be your number one penalty kill centerman, and he's going to be taking all your defensive zone faceoffs, well, I think he's a valuable guy. Is he a prototypical number one center? Well, no. But is he on par with maybe one of the better second line guys in terms of his point production and what he brings to you in terms of the other facets of the game? Well, for sure. So I think it's a tough argument to sell him as a number one center. But on this team, he's become almost like a Swiss Army knife in terms of his value.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This is TSN 1290. Listen online at tsn1290.ca. We're joined by Michael Trakos of the National Post discussing the Toronto Maple Leafs.
Michael, David Clarkson and Dave Bolin won't be in the lineup for the Leafs tonight against the Jets. David Clarkson is dealing with that elbow injury, and he's expected to come back next week, I believe. Mm-hmm. Is that still accurate, or what's the latest injury update on first Clarkson and then Bolin?
Yeah, you're right on Clarkson. Both Nonis and Carlisle said this week that it's probably another week before he comes back. And it's kind of a funny injury. He split his elbow open and then got it stitched up during a game and continued to play with it. And it eventually got to the point where whether it was infected or whatnot, but it had to be operated on. And I think now we're just waiting for it to get completely healed before he gets a similar problem with trying to kind of rush back again. So with Clarkson, it's tough because he's had such a difficult year, whether it's injuries or suspension or not being able to find a spot in the lineup. So even without him, you look at their team's record, and they're actually better without him than they are with him. So I don't think there's any kind of rush in trying to, in terms of getting him back or thinking that he's going to affect the lineup in any way. But with Bolin, it's a huge mystery as to when he comes back, just because we saw with Erik Karlsson last year, when you get a severed tendon, in your ankle, you're basically learning how to skate again. And even if you're physically fine and he looks to be getting better in that regard, a lot of it's mental still. Knowing how to push off and work on your edges, well, that's something that it's almost a comfort thing that he's got to really feel good about. So we're looking at least past the Olympic break, and we could even see him maybe right before the playoffs or into the playoffs where we don't get him back. So and that's an injury that really is hurting the Leafs, because you had him as a second or third line center, and what he allowed to do was, if Bolin's going good, then he plays a second line center spot, and Hazem Kadri gets third line minutes and gets paired up against some of the weaker defensive pairings in the NHL. But Kadri's had to play more up in the lineup, and I think it's been a bit of a struggle for him consistently this year.
You know, with this injury, taking into account the injury, Michael, I guess it's a tough question, but Boland is a pending UFA, and of course the team knew that when they acquired him this offseason. With the injury, has there been any talk about an extension? And also, Nikolai Kuhlman's probably the other big and most significant UFA coming up. Has there been any talk with him?
Well, with Boland, there was talk right before he got injured, and then he had the injury, and I was talking with Leafs management, and they said that really talks have cooled off completely since the injury. So I imagine the Leafs will try to get him, get Bolin signed. The tricky thing now is just coming up with the dollar value, because he was on pace for his best career year in terms of point production and even playing minutes. But now with the injury, I think you got to really have to evaluate what kind of number you signed to and how long that contract is. With Kuhlman, I fully expect that the Leafs are not going to be able to re-sign him. I think he's going to be a guy that they let walk, and part of that is because he's not pointing up the points that he once did when he scored 30 goals or even close to it. And really, he's become almost like a dime a dozen player. When you look at a third line guy who doesn't produce points and is just a good forechecking penalty kill player, well, you can find a lot of those guys in the minors at a cheaper cost. So I think Kuhlman's due for a change of scenery, and I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up either in Pittsburgh, where he's got a relationship with Malkin, or in Washington, or wherever Mikhail Grabowski goes, because those two have a huge relationship as well.
Michael, you mentioned Nazem Kadri a few minutes ago, and he obviously hasn't scored at the level that he scored at last year when he was a point-per-game player during the lockout. There have been reports that maybe Nazem Kadri doesn't fit into the long-term plans because he's not a Randy Carlyle-type player. There have been reports that the relationship between them isn't very good. Do you believe that, or do you think that the relationship is fine and Kadri is just having a bit of a sophomore slump?
Yeah, I think we just had the latter part of it, and I think the Leafs are really frustrated with Kadri, because similar to like an Evander Kane, this is a guy that's got a ton of talent, and then on some nights he can just really wow you with everything he does, but there's not a fit there, whether it's philosophical or it's a maturity thing. But the Leafs are really trying to be patient, because they know that here's a guy that if they do give up on, he could put it together in another environment and really burn them and make them regret the decision if they do kind of pass on him and trade him at this stage in his career. So the team's trying to be patient. They're trying to at least light a fire under Kadri, I think that's part of the reason why a lot of these kind of trade speculation and trade rumors have become so public in the last couple of weeks, is that they're really trying to make Kadri see that this is something that, if he doesn't put it together, that they are going to look towards trading him or moving him. But I don't see them trying to actually do that this year. I think that, similar to getting a James Van Riemsdyk from Philadelphia, and Philadelphia was at the same kind of point where it's saying, like, here's a talented guy, just isn't able to put it together. He gets traded to Toronto and he becomes an all-star winger and one of the best power forwards in the game right now. So I think Toronto's really, really trying to be patient, but when you got a guy like Peter Holland, who same draft year, and the Leafs picked him up from Anaheim, another first-round pick, here's a guy that's really kind of pushing Kadri as well. So it's going to be interesting. If I had to wager on it, I think Kadri remains with the Leafs this year and next year, but he comes up on free agency after next season, so it'll be interesting to see if he lasts next year with the Leafs or not.
Michael, we'll let you go on this last question. We talked about Nazem Kadri and his relationship with Randy Carlyle. There was talk earlier, I mean, I think it was crazy talk a little bit, but when the Leafs were really struggling and they'd lost that, you know, five games in a row, that perhaps Carlyle's job was in jeopardy. What grade would you give Randy Carlyle for the job he's done as Leafs head coach this season?
You know, I think just an average grade. When you look, I thought the expectations were a little higher this year just based on what they were able to do in the shortened season and then almost take, almost defeat Boston. So when you add Dave Bowen, when you add David Clarkson, and when you've got a lot of young players who should have been a little older and a little bit more advanced in their development, I was expecting Toronto to be a little better, a little bit more consistent, and same problems that they faced last year with getting outshot and relying on one line to do most of the damage has been the same kind of formula this year. So I'd give maybe a C plus.
Michael Trakos covers the Toronto Maple Leafs for the National Post. He's one of our all-time favorites. Michael, thanks very much for doing this afternoon.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Take care, Michael. Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live at TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Minutes past 1 o'clock. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. This segment is brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center. Whether an elite athlete or a weekend warrior, wearing a proper fitting, custom-made mouth guard designed for you by Dr. Les Rikus and the Linden Market Dental Center, it's an essential part of your protective equipment. Give yourself peace of mind protection as well as facial teeth and mouth protection. Contact the Linden Market Dental Center at 204-487-2226 or online at lindenmarketdentalcenter.com. Richard Pollock.
We have a live escapade. During the break, I had to use the washroom.
Okay, that's happened more than once.
Full disclosure.
Why do our lives have to always be broadcast live on air?
Okay, so I go to the washroom walk out of the washroom, and then I look to my right, and Ezzy walks out of the washroom. But I was in the men's washroom.
So, Ezzy, you were in the women's washroom.
I wasn't looking. I've been here many times, Boston Pizza City Place. I wasn't paying attention. I was looking the other way. I opened the door and then saw a girl washing her hands and realized, oops, I went into the wrong bathroom. So, I mean, accidents happen. I'm a little bit sick. You got to forgive me a little bit here. But obviously, Richie had to mention that on air.
Well, it would not be the show if we did not throw each other under the bus.
The doors are right beside each other.
One says men's and one says women.
I told you, I wasn't looking. I was looking the other way. Someone was getting a pizza, and I was distracted and I went into the wrong room. I mean, obviously, I didn't walk into the room. As soon as I opened the door and saw that it wasn't a man, I quickly got out of there. So, no harm, no foul.
We'll let the other person be the arbiter of the harm and foul question here. Last week, I believe, the Hockey News came out with their annual edition about the top 100 people of power and influence in the NHL.
Congratulations, Drew. You made it.
I didn't actually make it, but that's I appreciate it. I think it was the 100 people with minimal influence is the list that I made. Number one, Gary Bettman. Any surprise for you there that he's the most powerful person in the game right now?
No, that's a slam dunk. That's
Gary Bettman's always been number one on that list.
And he'll always be number one so long as he's commissioner. I think the commissioner in general will always be number one. If you look at maybe not baseball, but probably still Goodell and NFL, and then, of course, David Stern, and will be Adam Silver in the National Basketball Association.
So you look through the list, and to me, part of the problem, or it just sort of exemplifies what the hockey world is all about, is that players themselves were not overly represented on the list.
Yeah.
So, you have management and you have owners and you have the business side of the game. But the players themselves, the lifeblood of the game, are not overwhelmingly influential when it comes to the game itself.
You have Don Cherry sitting at 38. You have, obviously, the TV players in the league are sitting high up there, whether it's insiders, whether it's broadcasters, general managers. Donald Fears way up there. Steve Fears on there. At the end of the day, Drew, these guys can have an effect on the game but the idea is that Gary Bettman can have an effect on the league 20, 25, 30 years. A player can't play that long to have an effect, unless you're like Timo Solani. So you do see some guys, they work their way up in terms of power, right?
Yeah.
Like, it's different. When you look at a player's career, generally a player will come up to his peak and then he'll slowly come back down. in theory, you could say Gary Bettman gets stronger with time. So he slowly gets better and better, or stronger and stronger, more powerful.
It's like a fine wine.
So it's different that way.
Yeah, but I mean, Ovechkin's number two.
Ovechkin, Crosby, then basically nobody else.
And you've got Brendan Shanahan on there, who's a former player. I mean, so.
But that's player safety.
Right, but again,
let me ask you this question. You mentioned Ovechkin 2, Crosby 3. In the right order, you think that's right? Ovechkin is more influential?
No, it's the wrong order for me.
But this list, you have to take the entire list with a grain of salt.
Like, well, of course, no, it's subjective.
No offense to Puck Daddy, but I mean, I think there are other players and other executives in this list that would probably make the list over Puck Daddy.
That's true. Yeah, so how did Puck Daddy get on the
list? We know Puck Daddy. He's a good guy, but I mean, this list is a little bit all over the place. You have guys going from 50, like Gretzky's in the 70s. So as far as I'm concerned...
So is Puck Daddy as influential as Gretzky?
Hold on. I'm just saying, this list comes out every year. I used to be a long-term subscriber of the Hockey News. So it comes out, and yeah, sure, these guys are influential, but you have to take this with a grain of salt, okay? So Rogers gets a big TV deal. Keith Pelley's number 9 a year after he wasn't even ranked. So you have guys that weren't even on the radar, Drew. Now all of a sudden this is the 9th most influential guy in hockey. So you have to, they have their different criteria here, but you don't take this list with any type of
It's subjective.
I don't take it too seriously.
That's the beauty of a list, is it's, you know, it's subjective. I mean, you see lists all the time, top 10 lists and all these things. So I'm not surprised at the way this was put together, and I think it's probably fairly accurate. Of course, there are omissions, and there are, you know, the inclusion of certain people I think is a little bit overblown. I thought an interesting one was Mel Owens, and there's a feature on Mel Owens in this piece, and Mel Owens is counsel for the players who filed the claim for the concussion. For the concussion lawsuit, and actually played, I didn't know this, played in the NFL for 9 seasons and has to deal with the issues of injury post career. So I think that gives it a little bit more of a personal aspect in terms of he can relate to these players, and maybe who knows what happens with that lawsuit. And I think we have certainly not seen the last of concussion issues in the National Hockey League on a not only current but on the future basis. Steve Moore has been doing been putting together his foundation for concussion information, and there's obviously concussion issues are still very significant, and the fighting aspect and all these things go into it. So the list I think is certainly worth a read. It's one that you might put together a completely different list, but just to see the perception of all of these people, you know, from the Hockey News, I think makes it interesting.
Well, and again, I don't want to pick on Puck Daddy here because I think he does a good job for Yahoo Sports. But again, you have Connor McDavid at 51. Okay, so he's going to be drafted most likely first overall in 2015, not this upcoming draft, but the year after that. So is he ranked 51 because he's going to kind of set the bar as far as young players coming in, that next generation and the impact? Or is he just there because he is such a highly ranked prospect? You know what I mean? Like, why? It's people of power and influence. And as far as I'm concerned, a 16-year-old player who has all of the talent in the world, you know, I'm not sure... Again, why is he on the list of having power and influence? How much power and influence can a 16-year-old have?
Well, I mean, how much can you have when you're a 16-year-old who has the hype around him that he can be better than Sidney Crosby?
Right.
I think he deserves to be on the list, Izzy, but I think it's, you know, you have... But I see your point, too. I mean, you have a lot of international hockey representatives on there, too. Probably guys you're not that aware of.
Sure.
And I think the Olympic being this being an Olympic year, excuse me, is a part of that, and the possibility of a World Cup being announced for 2016 is a part of that as well.
See, to me, this list is kind of blurs the lines between newsmakers and people that have power and influence.
But those things aren't exclusive either, though.
But how is Connor McDavid having influence on the business of hockey right now? Okay, he's just concentrating on playing his game and being drafted number one overall.
What about the fact that maybe teams could throw the season, maybe intentionally, unintentionally, next year to get him?
Right, so he has that influence, but he's not purposely trying to have that influence.
That's true.
That's like the idea of Connor McDavid.
Right,
having
but the
that
idea. How many people
the
have
idea
you heard
of
talk?
Drafting him.
How many people have you heard say, "Let's just tank for Connor McDavid for their respective teams"?
You hear it more in regards to basketball, but certainly in
You hear it for Connor
for hockey
McDavid.
Too.
Now there's a lottery, sure, but there's a lottery in basketball. It's not like the NFL.
Right, you're absolutely right, though. It's not sacrosanct that you don't hear it. Sometimes it's talked about. Anyways, the point is, it's an interesting article. You can pick it up or you can check out the Hockey News website, or you can get it at your local retailer. Go Puck Daddy. Let's go to break. When we come back,
we have a good story about it. Before we go to break, when Ezzy spilled beer all over Puck Daddy's DVDs and movies he was handing out at the draft. He had one of these tweet-ups, I guess it was, and he was giving away prizes.
You're at the draft in New Jersey.
Yeah, and he has this bag. It's a great Ezzy story. He has this bag of, like, gifts to give away, like, funny gifts, old, like, Barry Melrose book or old hockey DVDs, and Ezzy walks by and spills beer all over the list, all over the movies and the DVDs, and they got into a little altercation.
No, there was no altercation.
You did keep calling him P-Daddy the whole time.
He did call him that the whole time.
Shout out for also 95, Jim Corsi gets on the list. No, that's one of those things. I like that. I mean, again, take it with a grain of salt, but this list is interesting. It's good, like, water cooler talk, I think.
Let's go to break. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You've been listening to
the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast.
Catch the Illegal Curve Hockey Show live Saturdays on TSN 1290 and TSN 1290.ca.